Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Secret Artists Podcast, comedians doing art and having a chat. I'm Annie McGrath, your host, and I'm joined this week by the brilliant Nina Conti. She chose for us to draw author Stephen King, who has a fantastically sort of cartoonish face. And Nina chose him because she's currently writing an autobiography, and Stephen King has been a huge source of inspiration for her recently. So we talk about that, we talk about comedy, we talk about art, we talk about pain, we talk about all sorts of things. So I hope you enjoy it. Check out Nina's film, her master's voice, which is brilliant. That's on Amazon Prime. And look out for her book, which hopefully will be out next year. Enjoy the episode. And if you want to see mine and Nina's artworks, then follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Secret Art Pod. Bye for now. I'm joined today by one of the nation's best-loved comedians and ventriloquists, Nina Conti. Nina has won a British Comedy Award, she's been on Live at the Apollo, Russell Howard's Good News, Sunday Night at the Palladium, and even made a BAFTA-nominated film, all without moving her lips. She's a brilliant actor, director, performance artist, and I'm delighted to have her on the podcast. Hello, Nina.
Hello, Annie.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm still having such a fiddle with my technicalities. Oh my God, he's horrifying.
Yeah, it's quite AM. Well, I'll let you explain. You've chosen brilliant author Stephen King for us to draw.
Yeah, and I have.
And why is that?
Well, I can't really say he's like a long-term mentor of mine. I've just discovered him, really. I think, like everybody else, I kind of had him, wrote him off as a schlock horror writer, but I've just finished The Stand, which is like about 3 inches thick. So it's a miracle because I'm really bad at finishing books. But I finished this one. And then I got into listening to him on Desert Island Discs and various podcasts. And I find him really inspiring because I'm trying to write myself right now. I'm trying to write an autobiography.
And how is it going?
It's like being, I don't know, it's like having hundreds of javelins thrown at you, but it's...
In a good way.
Yeah, no, not a good way, but in a way that you think, if it's this difficult, there must be something to it.
Yeah.
But maybe not, maybe. No, it feels sort of interesting to do. And then the whole notion of clean writing seems very important to me. Like to be able to write clean and not with so many adjectives, like overloading with adjectives to prove your point, and just saying it as truthfully and cleanly as you can is something I think he is so good at.
Yeah, that's interesting. And this photo of him that we're drawing from today is quite, it's almost like a cartoon. Like his face is so sort of bizarre, isn't it? It's like a caricature.
I know. I think it looks as if he's pulling a face that is going to please the people that like to think of him that way. You know?
Yeah.
Do you see a little layer of irony about it? Oh, you want this guy? Okay, I'll give you this guy.
It's amazing. And what are you going to be using to draw? Are you drawing or are you painting?
I'm drawing. I'm going to use charcoal.
Ooh, nice. Love a bit of charcoal.
Because I can wipe it off and go over it again.
Yeah, charcoal's quite forgiving, isn't it? You can sort of smudge it around and, yeah.
No, it's
also good for, like, the lines in his face as well.
Yeah.
I'm using colouring pencils, quite posh ones. I don't know if you can see the tin.
Oh, they're lovely.
24 Studio Derwent.
Do they smear into a watercolour or are they just a straight pencil?
Oh, I don't know. I could try licking them and see.
Yeah, lick them.
So he's been a very... I'm going to start drawing, by the way.
Okay, I'm going to start drawing too. All right, good.
I'm going to start with his glasses or sort of the creases of his face.
But he said his little arses. Okay.
I'm going to start with his arse. Yeah. The only bit that's not photographed.
So how's talking and drawing for you? You good at that? You must be practiced.
I'm getting better at it as the series goes on. But it is a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I can feel this challenge already. This multitasking slightly reminds me of that. I did a thing called the Improvathon where it was like 50 hours without sleep, improvised soap. And you are supposed to, so the theory goes, you kind of get in touch with your lizard brain after so many hours without sleep and you're completely unself-conscious and you're just improvising, like the world you're in is real. It's not like that, this exactly, but it feels a little bit like I certainly haven't got my guard up because I'm too busy copying this drawing.
And do you feel you're less self-conscious when you are sleep-deprived?
I think I probably was, certainly my standards were lower, you could put it that way.
Sometimes I think when you care less about something, you do create better things, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Less worried about failing.
Yeah.
And going back to Stephen King, are you quite into horror as a genre, or are you just interested in sort of the way he crafts his writing?
Yeah, the horror stuff. I mean, I've been reading this. I bought the book in paper, but I mainly read it with my ears. And so I would listen to it I would sort of drift a bit. And I would always wake up at a horrific bit. And I hated that, actually. I was really frightened and alone. No, it wasn't actually even the horror that I found interesting with him. It was just like the human moments are very, very good. Bloody fucking great. I can't... Anyway, it seems like he's... Although he's the best-selling author probably ever, incredibly underrated as a writer. Artistically, people don't give him the awards. I think it pisses him off, but he just keeps getting...
I wonder why that is. Do you think horror is sort of thought of as less of an art form than other types of literature?
Yes, I think that's the art. Yeah, definitely. I think it's a genre problem.
Similar to comedy, I guess.
Yes, actually, probably very similar to comedy in that way. Yeah. Oh, this is a crazy face to be looking at. I feel like a total trespasser as well. looking at him so. I hadn't bargained on this. Because we nearly drew monkey, didn't we?
Yeah, well, I stupidly thought that was a really great idea, but obviously. You said I've drawn monkey loads of times before. In what context have you drawn him before?
Well, I don't know. I designed a website years ago and did a lot of drawings, and I do sometimes little cartoon strips that I don't ever put out there. I doodle him for my kids, and I've drawn him a lot. And I kind of become blind to the way I draw him. I do a certain thing and I can't like do it differently or discover anything now when I do it. I just fall into the same. And then aren't many contours either. It's almost just like an outline.
Yeah.
It's just very basic.
And I think when you're sort of emotionally involved with, well, normally I say it about people, but obviously in your case, it's monkey. When you're quite involved with them on an emotional level, often they can be harder to draw because you can't see them for what they are because you're sort of emotionally invested.
You're just maybe and it's very disturbing to think how emotionally invested I probably am in that little monkey. I mean, yeah, way more than this guy we're looking at right now. Scary.
He does look sort of animalistic, like his mouth is quite frog-like, isn't it, with the line.
I think his mouth it's very light monkey, his mouth.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure he'd be flattered to hear that.
Well, she always had worse.
Do you find that an easier way to write by sort of getting into character?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And he's less, less emotional of boys to write in.
Yeah.
Cleaner. Much cleaner. He doesn't have a reputation to protect. He doesn't give a shit. So it's a kind of unaccountable voice. It's much nicer to write in.
Yeah, it's great. Because also when you're doing sort of audience interactions, you can be so rude as Monkey and then just sort of laugh it off as yourself. It's a very clever device to have.
It's a handy one. But I definitely do think, what is it? Why do I so much want to say these like awful things? What is it about me that wants to do that?
It's good though. It's like a double act. You can have sort of good cop, bad cop, and the audience won't blame you for anything Monkey says because it feels like another person.
Yeah. Well, you'd know because you're in a double act, aren't you?
Or, yeah. So I was probably bad cop in that. So I relate to right. Well, we were both sort of, I guess, idiot type personas, but Jack was much more the sort of likeable one, I think, and I was a bit more acerbic.
It's funny. And I've been thinking about when I started learning ventriloquism. I did that. I was living on my own. I was a bit sort of pissed one night and a bit lonely. And I remember thinking, well, I've got to kind of populate the place and I'll get the camera on and I'll do some videos because that'll be less quiet.
Yeah.
And I remember really enjoying that and feeling like I was kind of back in touch with playing like when you were a kid in a way that I hadn't been. I felt like, oh, I'm having a really good day with the teddies. You know, it's been a while. It's been 25 years.
And do you feel
I started in my late 20s.
Like you've been hanging out with friends, like after you've had a session with the puppets. You feel like socially satisfied in the same way.
Oh, God, isn't it sick? I slightly do. I just feel like I remember that bit where he said, you know, I might recall something that he said rather than when I made him say that thing. I'm like, well, in memory, he said it. At the time, it's not like that, but. I don't know.
So that's good. I guess you have to think of them as separate beings in order for it to work because your reactions are so good and so natural. And I think you wouldn't be able to have those reactions if you didn't fully believe they were different.
Yes, people. Probably not. Yeah.
But I was amazed to hear that you taught yourself how to do it from a book.
Yeah. I mean, that book was bought for me by Ken Campbell. So the story goes more that it was him that made me a ventriloquist. But Yeah, I think you can't really be taught. You have to do it yourself, really.
Yeah.
There was a Teach Yourself Ventriloquism kit, which was 30 booklets in 30 days, and that was what I learned from. And it was, it was slow, actually, and I skipped ahead because you can teach somebody the rudiments of ventriloquism in you know, under a minute, if you're not trying to draw Stephen King, I could try. I mean, I'm quite struggling with this multitasking and I seem bothered about whether this drawing's any good. It doesn't matter if it's any good.
Mine's actually much worse than I thought it would be, given I feel like cartoon-like faces should be easier because everything's exaggerated. But I think I've like squished his face too much. He's got quite a high, like receding hairline, hasn't he? And I think I've squished that down a bit too much. Was it your mum who said you should get a degree rather than going straight into, or she sort of warned you that showbiz was slightly precarious as a career path?
Yes, she did.
I wondered if you would do the same for your kids. Would you want them to go, would you encourage them to going into something different, or would you be happy if they both wanted to be ventriloquists?
Then I'd be delighted. I don't know that I would recommend ventriloquism. My son is sort of already acting and he just had his first little part in a film.
Oh, wow.
So he's much more confident than I was as an actor as well, and better. Mm. So I'm fully encouraging him, actually. I sort of think, yeah, Yes, do. Start now. Don't go and get loads of backup plans and slow yourself up. Just go for it.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, but then I'm reacting to the parenting I had, I suppose, and thinking, don't do what I did. That's, yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised at how unconfident you sound in your acting ability when you were in the RSC from quite a young age, weren't you?
Yeah, but it wasn't. I didn't have a good role. I mean, that doesn't mean I was any good. God, have you been? I mean, it's not always the best. Always the best actors that end up. That's so slanderous.
I feel like it's the most. Well, it's seen as the most prestigious, though, isn't it? In terms of like British theatre.
Yes, definitely. Certainly the most, you know, vocalized, and they do stand big, you know, they're loud and they stand big. If you like that, you'll get it there.
So do you think going into comedy was like a reaction against doing something like that?
Yeah, definitely. And it was seen very unoriginal to be doing acting anyway, because my parents had, and I thought, oh yeah, just go on, get born in and do the same bloody thing. After studying philosophy and then realizing that didn't lead to any career, I ended up doing it, but I was really self-conscious about it. And then when I found ventriloquism, I was like, yes, something finally mine.
Yeah,
all no one wants this.
It's like performance art, isn't it? Rather than, well, it's comedy, but it's it feels like so much more than that, I think, creatively.
Yeah, it's just another medium, right? It's charcoal or pencil or whatever. It's just another way to get it out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have done, I suppose, characters would have been what I'd have done otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I was mainly doing character roles, anything but myself.
Did you ever, so what made you not go into doing more characters? Was it because Ken Campbell suggested ventriloquism?
Yeah, I think it was just going to be such a USP, I suppose. And and it felt like it was character. It felt like it was, really.
Yeah.
And then it definitely freed me up to start thinking of things to say. I think when I was acting, I definitely thought there was a great big divide between people who write and people who act.
Yeah.
And then when I started doing Monkey, I thought, writing's just, I don't know, it's just saying the things and, I don't know, not getting in the way too much.
Mm. Do you think it's been harder coming to write a book, given that your process of making work for the stage has been so improvised recently? Has it been quite a different discipline to be sort of sitting at a desk again? Or
yeah, it's horrible. It's really horrible. But there was an article in something, I can't remember what, that about Stephen King. This is probably what really kick-started me.
Mm-hmm.
My partner Shanoa was reading me this article as I was driving, and it came to this bit where Stephen King had said, or his son, I think it was his son, or is anyone in that family, they work for 2 hours a day minimum. Like, that has to happen or they get really antsy, anxious. Wow. So you've got to do your 2 hours a day. And we started talking about, well, what would it be like if we did 2 hours of writing a day for a year? I mean, you'd end up somewhere, certainly.
You'd end up with something good, surely.
End up with something. So now we're on, like, day 90.
Wow, and so you've both been doing that, have you?
Yeah, we've both been doing that 2 hours a day. And
that's amazing.
That's the minimum, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it took away the kind of, oh, I don't know if I'll write today, or I don't really feel like it. It's just like, you've got to, that's not negotiable. You do 2 hours, that's it.
Yeah, and I guess it gets you out of the worry of, like, what it's like. If it's good or bad, you just do it, and then...
Yeah, you just do it. That morning pages thing, do you remember that? Did you ever do that?
Oh yeah, we just get up and write
way.
Full page. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I filled a load of notebooks with that shit.
But Stephen King is known for being quite bad at endings, isn't he? I think he's
is he?
Yeah, I've heard that. I think he himself acknowledges that.
That's really funny. Well, it sort of makes sense, having just got to the end. It wasn't the best.
Oh, really? Terrible ending. Did he wake up and it was all a dream?
Oh, no, it had an incredible crescendo just like prior to the end. So that was the end, really. And then it just went on a bit. But yeah, it was, God, I've lived in that book for so long. I was like, I started it maybe 2 years ago or something.
Oh, really?
I've read other things in the meantime, but it was, I've read it before the pandemic started, and it's about a pandemic. So I was already thinking, oh, well, I'm reading the right thing at least.
Yeah. I need to read it. But yeah, I was interested in the ending thing, because I think with comedy, that's definitely sometimes the thing I struggle with, like structure-wise. That's bad, isn't it? I struggle with punchlines. But I mean, like, when you're constructing a sketch or something, it's always the ending that's quite difficult, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you sort of plotted out your book? Do you know, I guess if it's an autobiography, you know hopefully you know what the storyline is.
I don't know. It depends where I decide to leave myself, you know?
Yeah.
I could leave myself at any point. No, I slightly do have my ending, and it's kind of surreal. I'm putting masks on people, or the masks that I use in my stage show. On real people in my imaginary act in my book, so then they just sort of I talk for everyone, obviously, is the idea. But yeah, probably won't go into it too much. I still don't bloody know.
When is it due to come out, or is that to be confirmed?
I've said I've got a deadline with myself that I should finish by January.
Oh, nice.
That's quite ambitious, but I'd love to.
Yeah.
But endings, I know that because, who is it? John Irving and Stephen King are friends. And John Irving writes the end first.
Oh, really?
And Stephen King's like, why would you do that? Why would you spoil it for yourself? Like, if... The way he writes is he just gets all his characters around a fire and they're sort of all then they're cooking. And what he says when he's writing, it's more like dictation. He's kind of watching them and just dictating what's happening. He's taking dictation. And then they will lead to a natural kind of point and end. And I think it's true. I'm not sure he is bad at endings, because it does seem like the only end it could be, kind of. And it seems a little preordained.
Right.
Not to get hocus pocus about it, but I really like the idea, and that's like improv, and which is the only thing I know how to do. So I think it's just writing the things and see where they go.
Yeah, definitely.
I think if you're kind of honest along the way, you're true along the way, they're more likely to go somewhere than if you're trying to cajole and manipulate the whole time.
Yeah, and if you build strong enough characters, then as you say, they will lead the narrative, hopefully.
Hopefully.
I think there's quite a lot of links between comedy and horror.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you have any favourite artists? As in like fine artists?
Fine artists.
Roarers or painters?
I can't immediately tell you. I think mine are all a bit obvious. Like Lucian Freud or David Hockney or something.
Oh, yeah,
like that.
They're great.
I don't know that they're my favourites. I just can't, you know.
Actually, this Stephen King photo could be a Lucian Freud painting, couldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That would be
sort of front on.
That'd be a better approach.
Portrait. Do you own any art?
I'd like to know what I like more. I get really confused. I get art blind. If I go to a gallery, I just go, oh, God, it's like I've switched off. And I think, oh, no, I'm meant to feel and react. And I've just gone blank. And my feet hurt. And where's the cafe? That's like often my reaction to art. But I buy art off this old guy who... Oh, I've got to be careful, haven't I, what I say?
Are you talking about your husband? No, this old guy who lives in my house.
There's a friend who definitely had a lot of drugs in his time. And he does these weird paintings. He's a good artist, but I mean, I definitely sort of think I'd buy... I don't know, he lives hand to mouth. I buy his art to make sure he's, you know...
He's eating.
He's got to have dinner, yeah. I'll hang that on the wall.
God, I hate the idea that that's why people might be buying my art. Yeah, it's fine. It'll do, but as long as he can have dinner. When you're at Edinburgh, do you worry each night that 700 people are worried you need some dinner money?
Yeah, they might well be. I think that there's a swathe of my audience that wonder if I'm okay.
Well, yeah, definitely following your therapy web series, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. There may be. But they'd be right now. I mean, definitely. They need some dinner soon.
Yeah.
If we don't get some shows on.
Got to write that book quickly.
Yeah.
I think I first came across you in Edinburgh when... So Jack and I were flyering for our double act and we bumped into a friend of ours called Jo Williams.
Oh, yeah.
And she'd been flyering for you and it was like day one of the festival and she had this massive box of thousands and thousands of your flyers and she was putting them in the recycling bin because you'd sold out your van.
Oh, really?
And we were like, fuck Nina Conti. She doesn't even need to flyer. All of her flyers are going in the bin and we were just like desperately trying to get people to come to our show.
Oh, fuck. Oh, Edinburgh's brutal.
Yeah. But no, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, must have been good a year. I've been lucky, very, very, very lucky. But I have been going there for ages, so you kind of get a following. But I have a stronger audience there than I do in anywhere else.
When did you first start going up then? When was your first year?
I think it was 2001, maybe 2002, first year. I don't...
How much do you think it's changed since?
Well, certainly have changed now. I think it's probably... Yeah, it's huge. But it's always been huge. I used to go a lot because my grandparents lived in Edinburgh. So I used to go when I was a teenager.
Oh, nice. So did you stay with them when you were up for the festival?
I stayed with them in Collington, got the number 10 bus and saw a bunch of shows.
Yeah.
And it was definitely seminal. It was really life-changing. I remember seeing Rona Cameron and Donna Tartt and Jeremy Hardy, Paul Martin, when they were young, little things.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was exciting. At the Joan Collins fan club, I remember that. God, I loved him.
Yeah.
Really fancied him. I didn't notice that he wasn't for me.
And what was your first venue when you went up in 2001?
2001 was the Comedia at Southside.
That's not there anymore, is it?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's called something else. Maybe it's called Zoo or something now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Southside was the place. That was a weird year and I wasn't doing my own thing then. I had Ken Campbell had written me a one-woman X-rated ventriloquial farce, he called it.
Wow.
And I had to do like, I don't know, I had these puppet characters, like demons had entered me. I got lodged in my arse and couldn't find their way out. And so I did this whole act with my arse to the audience, like these talking characters that got stuck it up there. Jim and Elsie, I think their names were, they were kind of hapless married couple that wanted out. And then I had to blast them out by using an aerosol that created a lot of steam. So I sat on a pan, I get my hand underneath my arse into the pan, and I spray this like mist up, and it was kind of dramatic coming out of the pan. Yeah.
Or was it easier to perform something someone else had written? Well, it doesn't sound like it would be, given.
No, because he's always provoking me, trying to make it like the hardest thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember objecting. Whenever I objected, I don't want to do this talking out my arse. And he was like, well, have you got a better idea? And I was like, God, no. All right, then. I'll do it. I just didn't.
So you had complete trust in him then?
No, I didn't. I just didn't have a voice to say this makes me feel weird. It feels a bit perverted and I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I don't think you'd get away with that now, would you?
No, you wouldn't get away with that now. And the other thing was that the monkey would bump my foot. And he'd written the monkey into this thing, and so it's like, he loves you, he's in love with you. And I was like, no, he's not in love. This is a platonic relationship. There's not one part of him that loves me. That is gross, you know, that's like gross. He doesn't. And he's like, no, but it's so funny when he humps your foot. They'll love it. And I'm just thinking, God, this is so gross. But doing it every night, feeling really gross. So, I mean, I had to have that awful experience, really, to come out and go, okay, I'm going to write my own stuff, whatever it is. It's not going to, at least I don't have to do that.
I wonder if that's part of why he made you do stuff you were so uncomfortable with, just to force you into, writing maybe. Your own thing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, he was a great goader. I made a talking penis once for one of my shows. But that was very easy. It was just a sort of, I don't know, just a mouth up a tight, really. A leg of a tight.
What is a penis if not a mouth up some tight?
Not often as good as.
Have you still got it? That's what we should have drawn.
No, I haven't, but I can fashion one and just a bit of warning.
Is there a chapter in the book in the voice of the penis?
No, there isn't actually. It wasn't the strongest character.
I'll ask you again in January when you're nearing your deadline.
My dad absolutely hated it, that act. He said, there's a line, Nina, there's a line.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah. He hated that. And there were the occasional walkouts. It was a little bit much, I suppose.
Do you tend to listen to feedback from your parents where shows are concerned?
I really try not to, but it lodges a little bit. And I can't unhear it. I definitely, I do more than I mean to. But I hear that with anything that's critical, it definitely lodges. But then you grow around it, I think. It's helpful.
I just wondered if you tend to try and avoid reading reviews of your shows or whether you think they're useful to absorb.
Well, I used to everybody in comedy knows him. I forgot his name now. Steve Bennett wrote some.
The Chortle reviewer.
Yeah, the Chortle reviewer definitely wrote some when I was impressionable, and, you know, that was the website I wanted to be liked on, you know. And there were some less than brilliant ones on there. But I did find those a little bit helpful. Thinking, well, yes, people will think that, and it was now. And then later on, I thought, I'm going to get ahead of the game on this. I'm going to get Steve. I'm going to write to Steve and ask him to direct my next show. And I did. I asked him to direct it. Oh, and then
you asked Steve Bennett to direct your show.
And asked, then you can't you can't write it. You know, I want to hear this. I want to hear the shit you're going to say before I've done it, you know, like in rehearsal.
That's such a good idea. Did he reply?
He did, and he came to a thing, and he did have some good ideas.
Wow.
But obviously then he couldn't be the one to review it, having, you know, vested interest. But no, it wasn't
very,
really.
It was a clever way of avoiding getting negative reviews.
I thought
do you want to be my director?
I know, I thought I'm really onto something here. I'm going to get Kate Copstick next.
Yeah. Broadway baby directing Nina Conti.
Yeah. Oh, this is awful. I can't see it even what it is. What have I done here? It's such a mess.
I've gone very dark.
Writing. This is the least clean ever drawing. It's so
about taking
insecure.
Risks.
Yeah, I haven't. It's insecure and lots of lines just in case this one's better than that one, you know. Being a bit more bold.
Yeah.
That's like my comedy act is I say one thing and the monkey says another and I just completely obfuscate what I really feel with lots of different lines.
As in you wouldn't say the first thing that comes into your head, or you would, but through monkey?
Oh, I don't know. I'd say two things that come into my head and they're kind of on either side and I'm somewhere in between them.
I see.
Smokescreen stuff.
Yeah. That eye of his on the right-hand side of the photo.
Yeah, it's a bitch.
That's
that
a real fucker, isn't it? It's far more open than the other one.
It's such an opportunity, that one.
Yeah, and I've just sort of scrawled in grey over the top of it.
Yeah.
Do you like visiting art galleries and exhibitions and things?
I went to see the one about trees at the Hayward recently.
Oh, yeah, I heard that was amazing.
It was really nice. What else did I go to?
I mean, there's not many options at the moment, are there?
No, there aren't. I haven't been for a while. Went to the Tate.
Oh, yeah. I was supposed to go and see the Tracy Emin and Edvard Munch one at the RA, but obviously it got shut down, so hopefully going to go and see that in December.
I could equally have drawn her. I mean, I don't know her very well, and I used to find her kind of, like, I don't know, too much. And then listened to some interviews of hers recently and just loved her attitude.
Yeah, I sort of flip between loving her attitude and, as you say, finding her a bit full on.
Yeah. The honesty is good.
Definitely. She's definitely an honest artist, isn't she? Doesn't seem to care what people think.
No, that's important. That was paint, that noise, by the way.
In the spirit of Stephen King, what's the worst ending of anything you've experienced? Books, films, TV, life.
You mean like an unsatisfactory ending?
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, that's a good question. God, I really can't. That's such a good question that I can't answer it.
I don't know if I could answer it either. I'm trying to think.
Worst ending. God, there must have been loads of them. I haven't seen anything so long. It's so hard to know. I saw it's a great documentary, Honeyland. That's not a bad ending. It's good.
Oh, wow.
And she's a very dignified beekeeper with very good practices with the bees. And then this like crazy feral family comes in and starts to try and do shortcuts to the honey. And it sort of screws everything up.
Check that out.
I don't know why I mentioned it particularly. It was just something I watched. And another thing I watched again, the second time, which I really love, is the documentary on Robert Crumb. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
They made a film, American Splendor, about Harvey Peacock. And he did the words, Robert Crumb did the drawings. But Robert Crumb did loads of, this is Robert Crumb.
Oh, yeah.
It's like quite sexualized and full on and witty and vulgar and completely not PC. I mean, really like worryingly not, but it's very riveting.
What's that one? There's this sort of quite grotesque looking woman with hairy boobs.
Yeah, he definitely draws his fantasies and he doesn't have an axe to grind. He's not like trying to subjugate women are wearing a thing. We get criticised for that a lot because it's so, it's like so vulgar, his drawings. But he's like, I don't know how it got in here. I'm just putting it out there and please don't look at it if you don't want to. If it's not for you, I'm not saying anything. It's just these images kind of go, yeah, I mean, really, God, quite full on, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But there's a very good documentary about him.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. Is that on really Netflix, good. Did you say?
No, it's on YouTube. It's brilliant. It's a really brilliant documentary. And it kind of, it's a soccer punch. It just makes, soccer punch? Sucker punch. I don't know what that expression is I'm trying to use. But yeah, it's a bit of a slam dunk. Oh, there's another one. Where do I get off with these expressions?
I love it. I just need one more sports-based analogy. Back of the net.
Yeah, thank you. Homer.
Oh, Stephen.
Oh, Stephen, you're getting worse and worse.
Have you ever met him? Well.
No. No, he got hit by a truck and survived. His body, he was just walking on a sidewalk and a huge great truck came and broke so many bones.
Really?
Yeah, crazy that that would happen to him.
Hmm.
I enjoy his I enjoy his Twitter account as well. He did like most recently little one I saw was when that fly landed on Pence's head.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And his tweet was just three words, the fly knows. Yeah. Pretty good.
It is good. Clean writing.
Clean writing, yeah.
What's the worst injury you've ever had?
Oh God, childbirth maybe, or broke my arm when I was a kid. It wasn't really just too bad. No, I think that childbirth was just definitely the most dangerous thing I've ever been through.
Oh really?
Yeah, it was one of those ones that had I not had the hospital there, it would have been bad.
Worth it?
Yes, worth it. Worth it, very much so. I'm glad it's all okay.
Yeah. Have you ever had any ventriloquism related injuries?
Yeah, I did actually. On Halloween, I sliced my finger to the bone.
Ooh.
And the finger that I use the most inside monkey's mouth. So, I mean, yeah, it's like I subconsciously tried to slit his throat with me.
Is that mid show?
Yeah. It was mid tour. And then I had Cheltenham was just about the lowest of the low. It was so painful. It was so painful.
And did the audience think it was part of the act?
I wonder what they thought. It was a great big bandage. I think everyone winced a bit when they saw it go into the puppet. As you know, in his tight little face, you know that big bandage was in there. I had it sticking straight up in his head and just used my other fingers to control the mouth.
God. Got to suffer for your art.
You got to, you know. I fainted in the A&E when I opened it. I knew it was really bad. You know, when you cut yourself and you think, okay, that's bad. So I won't think about that. I'll just bandage that up and I'll get to A&E and I won't look and I won't think.
Yeah.
And then when they took it off, it was just so gnarly that I hit the floor.
Oof.
But I was quite stressed. I was really stressed. It was a bad time I was going through, and the having the tour and everything, and family awful things going on. And I remember hitting the floor and thinking, "Don't disturb me. This is the best time I've had in ages."
That's a worry, isn't it?
I could hear all the voices going, "Get her off the sheet," and I was like, "Shh, shh, shh, shh. This is my happy place. Just fucking let me have a bit longer."
Quickfire round. Oil or watercolour?
Watercolour.
Contemporary or cubism?
Cubism. God, I don't know. These aren't true, these answers. I'm just answering quickly.
That's fine. Hamster Teeth or Regent's Park?
Hamster Teeth.
Monkey or Nina?
Monkey.
Portrait or landscape?
A landscape.
Can you separate the art from the artist?
Try.
Tortured artist or rational philosopher?
Oh, that's both. Both. That's really tough. I think that's a real blend.
Tango or tap dance?
Tap dance.
Royal Shakespeare Company or Edinburgh Fringe?
Edinburgh Fringe all the way.
Talk about or think about art?
Talk about.
Looking at the painting close up or far away?
Close up.
Carrie or The Shining?
The Shining.
Dolly mixtures or wine gums?
Dolly mixtures.
Private view or view of privates?
View of privates.
Art or tech?
Art.
Art or books?
Tough on books.
Art or food?
Art.
Is what you do art?
I think so.
And finally, dicks or pussies?
Oh, that's too much. That's too rude. I'm looking for a combo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What would Monkey say to that? If it's too rude for Nina.
Dicks or pussies? He'd say arseholes.
Perfect. Oh my God, that is amazing. That is so good.
I've drawn God, Monkey really even though we tried not to. I ended.
I love the detail. I love the lines. You've really caught the light on his nose and the various parts of his face. It's amazing. It's
thank
so
you.
Good.
You're being very kind.
No, but also it's perfectly horrifying as well.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying.
It looks like a sort of demon.
Yeah,
demon headmaster.
That eye. You've got that eye's the one, isn't it?
That bit of his philtrum. It's great. Mine's much more sort of small, I think, because I've got a very tiny page. Can you see that?
Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. We've both drawn monkeys of a kind.
Yeah.
That's not unlike Robert Crumb, some of it.
I think I made him look like a sort of seedy librarian.
I really like it. I really like his hair. He's such a compact unit and he's all dark around the eyes. It's fantastic. And I love I love that you've given him depth with that shadow in the background. That really is nice. His hair.
Thank you.
That's good. Those smile lines.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give you full marks because I love it. It's so good.
That's very kind. I give you full marks too. I think they're great.
So kind.
That was really fun.
Very generous. Thank you so much. It was so nice to talk to you.
Very nice to talk to you. Thank you.
What a woman. Thank you very much to Nina Conti. I loved chatting to her. If you're not already following her, then what the hell are you doing? She's on Instagram at the Nina Conti and on Twitter at Nina Conti. I'm on Twitter at Annie McTweet and on Instagram at McGrath.Annie or at McGrath.Art for my art. I also have a website where I'm selling paintings, prints, Christmas cards, you name it, I've got it, as long as it's one of those things I just described. The website is amcgrath.art and... what else is there to say, really? Remember to look at mine and Nina's drawings if you'd like on at Secret Art Pod. Thanks for listening. Look after yourselves. Have a lovely week. See you next time. Bye. Secret Artists is a Turtle Canyon comedy production for Acast. Music by Alistair Clayton. Quickfire Round music by Steve Dunn.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.